I always wanted to know who the best player was on tour simply because I wanted to actually work as hard. And then I ran into a little guy by the name of George Knutson out of Canada. And I watched him hit the golf ball. I watched him with the wide stance, taking the club back way inside, releasing the club. One of the greatest ball strikers I'd ever seen.
Hello, welcome to this week's edition of the Mackellar Golf Podcast. My name is Lawrence Donegan. As you know, I am joined this week by my co-host, Jeff Shackelford. But I'm also joined by my successor as the Guardian's golf correspondent. He's not as good as me, obviously, but he's pretty good. Ewan Murray. Ewan, how are you doing, pal?
I'm doing a little worse after that introduction. Thanks very much. No, I'm good. I'm good. Yeah, I'm at Sawgrass. There are worse places to be, etc., etc. All fine.
The reason we got you on, Ewan, was that you were at Jay Monahan's press conference this morning, Tuesday. Seismic press conference, hugely or widely anticipated. He spoke for, I timed it, 59 minutes. He had an introduction. I guess I should, Jack, I think I should maybe start with what Jay said and then we'll get into the guts of it.
No, let's just hear Ewan's reaction. Come on.
Well, okay, then Ewan.
He didn't say anything, so.
Well, Ewan, what did you, general overview response, and then maybe we can get into specifics afterwards.
I mean, it's quite a skill for someone to speak for 59 minutes and say so little, and someone who also speaks so infrequently to the media. He maybe speaks twice a year in that kind of format. The lack of detail around where the sport is going, I thought was, you know, glaring and possibly alarming. And also some of it is, you know, plain nonsense, isn't it? I mean, the strength of the PGA Tour, the strength of the fields. Here we are at their flagship event. The Masters champion isn't playing. USPGA champion isn't playing. I mean, it's also a skill to say that with a straight face, which is what he did. I mean, we'll go into specifics, as you said, but those were my immediate takeaways.
Jeff, yourself?
Yeah, I mean, that part early on was just astonishing to still wheel out the field depth and meritocracy. I mean, you've just finished a signature event that had a smaller field. Just all that stuff was wild. I thought I didn't expect anything coming on the notion of the investment and the negotiations. And that wasn't a shock. But clearly they've been listening to the Mackellar pod, Lawrence, because he said fan or fan base 40 times. And it was already telegraphed last night on Golf Channel and in the pre-show. Clearly it said, Jay's going to really show how he's thinking about the fan today. And unfortunately, you can say the word, but you need to back it up with something. And just saying that Arthur Blank and Tom Werner and John Henry are bringing their expertise is not going to get the juices flowing with the fan base either.
What about his demeanor, Ewan? Because I just, Kyle Porter there, one of the Twitterati influencers, I guess, a good smart guy, Kyle, he was really, I thought it was a very good point. For somebody who appears in front of the media 1.5 times a year, his patience for questions seemed to be fairly short. I thought he was quite terse in his manner and his tone delivery. I don't know. Am I overreading that?
No, I think that he actually got more terse, I thought, as it went on. He didn't start that way, but I thought it quickly developed into that. I agree with Kyle's point. I mean, he doesn't speak to us often. I don't think the questions are ones you wouldn't expect or out of line or out of order. I just think he's probably not very good in that situation. I think one-on-one or in a more relaxed setting, he looks to me always quite tight, quite tense about the whole thing, and I think that's probably what we see in his reaction. One other thing that I meant to mention, this time he spoke about ultimately a good outcome for the PGA Tour and the world of golf. When he spoke at East Lake last year, it was all about the PGA Tour. PGA Tour will lead this, PGA Tour, PGA Tour. And I know that raised eyebrows at Wentworth with the European Tour group because it was only about this business. I thought it was telling, language is important, obviously. I thought it was telling that this time it was about the world of golf as well as the PGA Tour. I think that's an important point to note.
I noted that as well. Ewan, I wrote it down. He spoke about to unlock golf's global potential He did that a couple of times, so I'm guessing that's a stop to the European tour. Yeah, Ewan, you're out on the beat. Well, obviously, I used to be, and Jeff's been out there, but we're no longer out there on a regular basis. In the good old days, I remember Tim Fincham and you know, Ken Schofield and all these guys. They would, you know, call them a gaggle. You would have a kind of informal chats. Does Monaghan do any of that, or does he not? He's completely cut off from the regular beat guys?
As far as I know, unless other guys have relationships with him that I don't know about, no, he doesn't. And he obviously, you know, he's so well protected, isn't he? There's a massive media team and all these people around him. So, no, he doesn't engage in that kind of stuff. I think you'd be able to tell if he did, wouldn't you? You would see lines and see information and see themes, and we don't really see that. So I strongly suspect it's not just me. He doesn't speak to, anyone.
What did you think of his overall demeanor, Jeff?
Well, yeah, he's generally awful in these things. He doesn't smile much. He usually his tie's goofy. Laura Neal, who's kind of his handler, is just terrible at her job. And so, like today, I mean, the camera, he was sitting, it was like 5 inches of space above him. He looked tiny, like he'd shrunken in his chair. I mean, optically, just pure optics, it's always poorly handled with him. And there's been a real disservice there. And she has a general hostility to the press. So she doesn't appreciate the fact that Jay is great one-on-one. And what Ewan just told us, that's exactly what he should be doing is, yeah, do this session. You say what you have to say, but he's the kind of person who can one-on-one explain to you, look, we're in the middle of this negotiation. What do you think? He'll ask her. Yeah, he's very good in those situations. And the fact they don't allow him to do that anymore, he's way better in that environment. And so it's just another example of how they've just mismanaged it so poorly. Because again, if they are having discussions and all this stuff's going on, of course I don't expect him to say much in terms of substance. I would have thought there might have been one or two things they could have hung their hat on, but I just don't think they have it. And I think they're just kind of at the mercy of these players at this point. And so he has to make sure that he keeps them happy and all that other stuff. But yeah, optically, visually, it was pretty dreadful. But I mean, there's a series of those appearances on CNBC and other situations like this. So it was kind of par for the course in that way.
I guess we should get to the headlines, but I'll just briefly run through his introduction. He started off with some verbiage about, I don't know, field depth. And actually, that was very funny. There's somebody in the data analytics department has come up with this figure of the strength of field this year is improved by 30%, a specific number. I thought that was just, kind of laughable. There was other stuff, but who cares about it? Then he moved on to the establishment of the PG Tour Enterprises, which apparently, Ewan, take a note here. I'm sure you got the news notes, will unleash the potential for future growth. The business is laser focused on fans. First meeting was 3 weeks ago of the new board. Fans are obsessed with data and analytics. Probably not after that 30% number. That would probably put a lot of people off. Then we moved on to the PIF, which is what everybody was interested in hearing about. You can't negotiate in public, but here's the headline, I guess. This is the headline they're looking for. Negotiations are accelerating. They have a shared vision to, again, that quote, to unlock golf's global potential. I thought, Ewan, that when he said golf's global potential, I thought he might be referencing some kind of world tour. But did you think the same?
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, I think whether this is going to happen or not, I don't know. But where they have to get to, I think, is where there's an overlap with these bodies, and the big events are sanctioned by these different groups. Sanctioned by LIV, sanctioned by the PGA Tour, sanctioned by the DP World Tour, and they are the biggest events. I think that's where they have to get to. Whether they can get there, and whether he believes they can get there, and whether there's a will to get there, I don't know. But yeah, I would agree with you. That's in the mix somewhere, and I think that's where they should try and go.
Did you, we're all probably overreading this stage because there is so little concrete information, but there doesn't seem to be any public sense. I mean, that anything's accelerating. If anything, I mean, he spoke the strategic sports group. They all went to Saudi Arabia in January. Well, no, that's two months ago. that doesn't give I wonder, Jeff, if that's where they all had to take their burner phones, probably. We spoke about that a couple of weeks ago. But there doesn't seem to be any general public sense of or feeling of acceleration. Is that fair? Do you have any insight into what's going on in terms of speed?
No, that's right. I'm so many months on from last June, so many months on from January. I still can't get away from my overriding sense that all last June was about was let's stop suing each other, let's stop spending all this money, let's stop the litigation. The rest could wait. And they've done that. And the kind of glacial, I understand it's complicated. I understand there's so many factors, but you know, it's all very well speaking about the fans and the fan experience. The fans want to know where they can see the best players in the world playing at any one time. And until they resolve that, you know, we're all in a state of flux, aren't we?
Well, we are 9 months in, Shaq. I mean, it's quite astonishing. We have zero detail, zero, other than, you know, if any. I mean, we spoke about it last week, Shaq, that Liv is now pulling out of the OWGR, not OGWR, whatever it is, sorry. So if anything, it seems that the parties might be pulling apart. And here we have Monaghan coming in, you know, this press conference saying it's accelerating. Well, there doesn't seem to be any feeling of that or any kind of clues or breadcrumbs towards that, is there?
Well, it could be accelerating down like a you know, a nosedive acceleration. That's possible. You did leave out one thing in the summary, I thought, which was a really nice homage to Tim Fincham when he said, They want to dimensionalize our great athletes.
That's
to grow
it.
Fandom.
I wrote it down.
Dimensionalize. That was very Fincham-esque. I actually found a few crumbs that we won't bore Ewan with, but I found a few things there I think help make me understand what the investment group is probably buying. But that's little. Well, I'm not going to say little stuff, but it's. It's concerning on another level, but to Ewan's point, yeah, most people just want to know when there's a good field of players playing on a good course and if it's worth watching. It really still comes down to that, and all of these entities are getting every one of these entities is getting away from that in some way. Liv bringing more recognizable names, but going to some really dreadful courses this year, and it really showed. So they all have their issues, and but the good news is 4 times a year we'll get to see the players come together and play at a good course.
Yeah, just finally on his introduction, he re-emphasized and he came back to later the charity element of the PGA Tour. He remains committed to that structure. Again, not much information or detail how it works, and it would run rather counterproductive to the way. The PGA Tour is treating the organisers of its various tournaments. But we'll see on that. We'll take him at his word. He finally finished off as a transformative time for the sport. And then I thought this was kind of interesting. We are happy to take the lead. I thought that was him kind of flexing a little bit. I don't know, again, Ewan, if I'm overreading that. Then we got to the questions. I might go through them here, Ewan. The first one was, I think it was our pal... potential PGA Tour player Dan Rappaport. He was asked if he'd done anything differently. I thought there was a Katie Britt moment, you know, the kind of dramatic pause. did you spot that, Ewan?
Yeah, and he referenced last summer and the way he went about it. I mean, is a simple answer to that question? No, he should have spoken to the PIF 2 years ago when they were going to be investing in golf. Is that not the exact thing you should be saying he got wrong?
Yeah, well, absolutely. You're dead right. He had said this before though, Ewan, hadn't he? That he kind of all this regret
the
thing.
Communication.
I think
he regrets the way it was communicated or not communicated, etc., etc. But to me, the fundamental point is when the Saudis were moving into golf, he had a duty actually to his membership to sit down with Yasser or whoever it might be, and find out what was going on. He just ignored them completely, which remains one of the most bizarre managerial approaches I've ever heard of.
Yeah, given what was at stake, but I guess he wasn't alone in the PGA Tour world and maybe perhaps underestimating what PIF could do and the amount of power and money that they had. Did you have any observation on the great regrets of Jay Monaghan, Shaq?
Oh, same thing. Yeah, just that's a layup that he could, he could have just said, there's probably some meetings I wish I would have taken, but I think when, yeah, in his case, his back's against the wall, his job is clearly in jeopardy, and so I don't, in the corporate mindset that they have and the marketing mindset, I don't think you want to even admit that kind of mistake. I'm just curious, just you and what was the mood like in the room? I'm just kind of looking at the transcript. I notice he never, and I don't believe me, writers are not looking for this, but I notice he didn't say, thank you for your coverage, which probably explained he's been reading some of the coverage and doesn't like it. But what was the mood like in the room, Ewan, with these? We saw the visual, which wasn't great, but I wondered what the vibe was.
Underwhelmed, I would think most people were, and I think rightly so. I think if you ask me for one word, that's what it was like. I think the whole thing was underwhelming. I think you'd be entitled to expect more at this point from someone in his position. I mean, even I asked him if this deal does not happen, what does the sport look like? And he wouldn't, he's got a chance there to say we have to get this done. If we don't, we're going to A, B, C, D. And Rex Hoggard asked to follow up with the same, basically the same question, and he wouldn't give a firm answer to that. And he must have contemplated it. He must know what the sport looks like if they don't get this deal over the line. Even things like that, he backed off from making firm, comprehensive statements when I think he had ample opportunity to do so. Sorry, Lawrence, you were going to go through these questions anyway.
No, it's okay. Actually, I noticed that when Hoggart came in, he got very tetchy with Hoggart, Jeff, didn't he?
I thought so. Yeah.
Yeah, really.
And what's weird about it too is you could say, look, you guys have to understand, we've got these whiteboards. We spent a lot of money. Norman Foster, designed the pen for them and our $100 million building, and we've got all these scenarios laid out. You just have to be patient. I know you guys want answers. I know the fan wants answers. But we can't, we've got a lot of entities. Other sports don't have all these entities to report to like we do. Roger Goodell just reports to the owners. Well, we've got players, sponsors, fans, all these different people. So you just please, be patient with us. We've got some really cool ideas on the board. Yeah, he just has no ability to do that. You can BS in a way that makes people feel good, and he just doesn't have that anymore. I mean, you saw the look in his eyes. He just looks beaten down from the whole thing.
You are dead right, Ewan. This response that my only regret or my biggest regret is last summer. I mean, he would get credit if he was more expansive. What does it cost him to say, you know what, I should have taken those phone calls, or I should have taken that meeting, back in 2019, or whatever? He gets credit. It's more authentic. It's less re sounds less rehearsed. Maybe it is rehearsed, but it sounds less rehearsed. And he gets more credit for being honest. And then you start. I mean, part of the issue that the PGA Tour has been this closed off, spiky. They're like porcupines. People ask them questions and they just, they kind of not bite back, but they're not interested in engaging, and they don't understand that engagement leads to a more. Not, I don't want to use the word sympathetic, but it leads to a more understanding approach to what they're trying to do and the way they're doing what they're doing. I just don't get it. So we're left with this. We have three guys like us, and I mean, I'm looking at the reviews that are in, by the way, Jeff. I mean, he's getting absolutely coated, and we might be criticized on here, but my goodness, he is getting annihilated so far.
That's well, yeah, and I'm not sure there was much potential for rave reviews, given some of the entities he's dealing with and all the egos and players and but yeah, just throwing out the word fan or fan base, I'm not shocked that that didn't resonate with the kids.
You guys, I mean,
Yeah.
you guys will know better than me, but I find this turnaround incredible. I mean, before Liv came along, Jay Monahan, I think, was probably the high would he be the highest regarded, certainly one of them, administrators in US sport. He had a wonderful reputation, and it's amazing how that has changed.
Yeah, but then that begs the question: what doesn't he recognize that, and doesn't he wonder, or doesn't the people around him wonder, why has that happened? Obviously, they had this, event, extinction level event, I suppose. But you know, how do you respond to that? I mean it's just amazing. Here, the next he was asked on the again, Jeff, you might have a view on this because you referenced it earlier on. He was asked about what are SSG looking for in their return on investment. He didn't really say very much, but I mean, I wonder if you have any ideas on that.
Well, I think if you piece together what was said in the conversation, you know, I think he was kind of clear on I think it was Kathy Bissell who was asking the difference between PGA Tour Enterprises and PGA Tour Inc. And he basically said, which I'm sure some people looking at their nonprofit status will wonder about, but he basically said they're very closely aligned. I don't remember the exact wording, but it sounded to me like the combination of mentioning the global home content center thing that's being built with 12 studios, and I can only imagine how much that's costing. The combination of that, this group, we know they have their championship management, and it just looks to me like the concept is to probably buy the Golf Channel or take it or whatever Comcast, you know, pick it out of the dumpster that Comcast has thrown it in and build up the dimensionalize the athlete stories
<That was it. laughs>
through their media, improve the television product on their own, which they've invested a lot of money in new trucks and all these different things, take a little more control of that. And then remember the ad sales structure is largely pre-sold. So they would love to, now that would be quite a relationship with the sponsors, but they would love to own that channel and then take that ad revenue that's pre-sold instead of having NBC have it. So that'll be it's a conversation we've been expecting or thought had already been resolved, but so far it hasn't. So there's that. And then there's betting and there's championship management running tournaments. So it's a lot of not very sexy stuff that in their mind, they can do all these things better. And I guess the problem we know with that is that there's a credibility loss when everything's a state media approach and everything is controlled by the state. And there's an authenticity there's a little more separation of entities that brings credibility and a more enjoyable viewing experience. But if all these people end up working for the tour, it just, you know, that whole situation just gets worse.
And you look at, I read constantly that the NFL is trying to offload its television channel.
Right.
So
correct.
Again, that's the biggest, richest, most powerful sport in the United States, and they are they can't make it work. So I can't imagine how the PGA Tour or even the Strategic Sports Group can make a PGA Tour event work. You had a point, Ewan.
I can't remember what it was. Sorry.
All right. Well, there you go. It's all right. Well, but again, it must have been a good one. I'm like that the whole time, Ewan. He was asked about the media rights deal. Actually, talking about the Golf Channel, Jeff, I don't know if you saw, their immediate response was pretty spicy. It's no longer Pravda TV. Noah Begay went in with we say in Scotland, Ewan, the tackety boots on and gave the ball, he gave Monaghan a good kicking. I'm not sure, I can't speak for Eamon Lynch because I didn't see Eamon, but I'm not sure Eamon is... I think Eamon might be in the wounded camp after what happened in June last year as well. So I don't know what you Eamon said, but I'm sure it wasn't entirely glowing. But
it was
not. Look later on. It was not. Here, we should. Then we got you, and we got to the question about the path back to the PGA Tour for live players. Again, he gave it the old Heisman, as they say in the States. Not in the best interest for me to be talking about the details of negotiations. I thought that was not so fast, Sonny boy.
Yeah, I mean, that was an example. He surely can offer some clarity, a small element of clarity there. Again, my sense is it isn't so much a path back as these events would have to become combined events. So Brooks Koepka isn't coming back to play in the...
He's not. Why would he?
Yeah, well, why would he?
But you want him in the Players' Championship field, you want him in these other big events, and the events overlap. I sense that is the way to do it. So it's not quite as simple as players coming back. But yeah, that, you know, he couldn't offer any insight, any clarity, any... At that point, I was scratching my head, wondering what the point of this was. And also bear in mind, you know, last week, Mike Weir said that the President's Cup will not involve any player playing in live. So, I mean, is this the language of people who are bringing the sport together? I don't know. It doesn't sound like it to me.
Yeah, and there's been that welter of, I mean, the list off the top of my head, Shaq, Jeff, who we got, Justin Thomas, Scottie Scheffler, Colin Morikawa, Jordan Spieth. They're all kind of putting up a, to a greater or lesser degree, opposition to live players coming by. I just think the assumption that live players would want to come back is kind of laughable.
That's true. That's also true.
It's also, absolutely. Did you see anything in the, did you notice any trying to read the tea leaves on the live players coming back or not coming back, Jeff?
In terms of what? I mean, they
Well,
just, they
he
don't
was
have any,
anyway. Yeah, go on.
well, they don't have any interest. I don't know why that question keeps coming up and why the players, when they're asked, a few have, I think, kind of intimate. I don't think they really are in a rush to come back, but yeah, to take those hard stances and, as Ewan said, to shut the door. I mean, it started, first of all, it started with the immediate suspension of Jon Rahm, which was something to get, I don't know, Mackenzie Hughes's status clarified. So that was the first sign we had back in December. They couldn't wait to suspend him. And then, as Ewan points out, I mean, it's just unbelievable that they wouldn't say, look, the President's Cup still, the qualifying's got a long way to go. We got many months. And then we'll have captain's picks. We'll figure it out. That's just down the road. And that the fact that they've already told him, no, not happening. Well, yeah, is that a negotiation tactic? If it is, it's not a very good one.
Actually, I always consider you to be a kind of Rory whisperer. I think there's nobody on the beat is able to kind of read him as well. It's true. I mean, we tease you sometimes, but I think it's true. What do you think he was up to last week with this, or the last couple of weeks with this? I mean, I know he came out and did that interview with Sky ultimately, saying he would never go to live. But I mean, it was a very weird, and I'm glad to get to have you on to talk about it. It was a kind of very weird detour, wasn't it?
The fact he wouldn't shut it down immediately when he was asked about it, you mean?
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, I don't know. I am reading him, and sometimes I'm not very good at that. But I think if I was him, I would make it publicly clear that that has to remain an option. It has to be possible. You can't shut that down completely. I mean, it's he would be doing himself a bit of an injustice when asked that. He said, no. I think what he's doing there, I think, as he's speaking about the current state of flux and the current state of the game, and all of these possibilities are on the table while the game is not properly unified. I think that's what he was, in a roundabout way, trying to point out, actually. That's what I thought at the time.
He wasn't trolling the people at the PGA Tour, was he? Or
Well, I mean, well, what you could link it to is, and he said it himself when Jordan Spieth came out, and we don't need the Saudis' money, etc. Rory, they said Rory called them up and had a conversation with them. So there could be a bit of that, as if to say, no, actually, we do need the Saudis involved. We need this brought together. Otherwise, the game is going to be split. And also, it won't be Rory McIlroy, but it doesn't matter. LIV will continue to drain talent from the PGA Tour if golf remains the way it is just now. That's just what they do. The last time it was Jon Rahm, then it was Tyrrell Hatton. Come the end of this year, it will just continue to be the case. So I think if Rory, in his own way, is pointing that out, I think he's quite right to do so.
what's his again, I'm not asking you to speak for him, but what the hell? What's his end game here? What's he looking for? Where does he want it to all go?
I think he wants the game, genuinely, I think he wants the game unified on a global basis. He recognises, and he's right, that players playing in all these different areas isn't good for anyone. It's not good for spectators. It's not particularly good for the players, I don't think. So I think he wants it combined and brought together. I think that's his ultimate. It's not about him. It doesn't really make much of a difference to him personally, but I think he wants the sport to be in a position where all the best golfers play, in the biggest tournaments in the one place, and it's very straightforward. I think it's as simple as that. I don't think it's at all about Rory looking after Rory. I think that's irrelevant to him at this point.
He doesn't need to live money, I'm assuming.
No, I mean, he could probably never say it publicly, but no amount of money makes any difference to his life at this point, does it? So that, that takes that element out of it for him, and I don't think he thinks that way anyway. But no, I think genuinely he wants the sport. He feels strongly that the sport needs to be in a different place to what it's in just now. Another thing is, people, never mind the fact that players are playing in different places, the public are turned off by this constant talk about money. He's getting this, he's getting this, he's moving for this. I think to the guy in the street or the casual fan, they roll their eyes now at this stuff, and it's damaging for golf. And I think again, Rory recognises that.
I speculated on this podcast a couple of weeks ago that, I mean, McIlroy floated the India Premier League idea, the IPL idea. I'd be shocked if there weren't some people somewhere in the world have come to him and said, "Hey, hang on, let's do it." Maybe the Saudis, be it somebody in the European Tour. That would be a pretty plausible scenario, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I don't know what Jess you, but yeah, I mean, I've said it. I think ultimately we have to get to a point where that happens in these big events, Champions League, IPL, whatever you want to call it. You know where the best players are going to play in the biggest events at the one time. But whether the complication involved to doing it and the will of people to do it, I'm less sure about. But I think they have to try and get to that place. I don't know if Jeff agrees.
Oh, it would be nice if they could. I just don't think they can agree on, where they're going to have dinner to discuss these things, much less get to that point. And then, you heard the answer today. He was asked about their media deal and maybe getting more value out of it. What Jay couldn't say was, well, actually, that's one of the best things we've got right now with CBS and NBC. We're just trying to hang on to that thing and not make it
That's right.
worse. So he had to give a vanilla answer on that. And I understood why. I think it was James Colgan who asked. So I understand why he asked. That's his beat. And it's a good question. But they've still got 6 years to go on that deal. And they're making sure to protect it. And I think we underestimate how much that factors into everything here, trying to make sure that deal doesn't crumble in some way. And we still don't know what the world ranking points element is of that. But, the idea of blowing that up, will you better have something really good lined up before you go to CBS and NBC and blow it up, because they still like the deal. And I think, although I've heard the NBC side is now openly complaining about it at times, so I don't know if that's legitimate or not, but that just could be like a lot of people now, kind of everything is, that's what's fascinating in this. You guys know, the floodgates have kind of opened. They've been in sort of immune from criticism for so long, and now everything is criticized. It's amazing to see. I mean, I used to get weird looks from people, if I've questioned something the PGA Tour did, and now everything they do is questioned by everybody.
There's a little. I don't know if either of you guys have watched it, the Full Swing. There's a little snippet in there somewhere. I think it might have been Ricky Fowler, and they're talking about Liv, and he says, "God, can you imagine if they partner up with Apple or Amazon?" I mean, that would be pretty terrifying for the PGA Tour. Here, one of the great things about these press conferences, Jeff, is you can try to gauge how much the commissioner hates the various individual journalists. By the terseness of his response, Alex Maselli got very short. Alex Maselli got the full custard pie. I think he wouldn't. I think he asked, "Wouldn't it be best for the tour to do a deal with PIF?" Jay went on for length and then finished. Of course, the deal would be best. But then I thought, with quite a significant caveat, was if it can be done. I thought that. I think somebody then asked, I don't know who it was, about the players objecting to this, that, and the next thing. And essentially, Jay was saying that it's difficult to balance the interests of 200 people. But the player directors, the guy who are in my pocket, my buddies, they best represent the players. So I think, I mean, I wrote in my notes here, essentially that means the players can fuck off. I don't know if that's, I don't know.
Just a little bit of a little context here. Do remember that Alex just won first place in the Golf Writers Awards for a column calling on Jay Monahan to resign. So so you understand maybe where that's coming from.
I would say, in a slight defense, there are now a serious number of very entitled golfers who think they should
Oh, cool.
have far more
Oh.
And have far more say than is healthy. So
Yeah.
in his defense on that one, I think he has a point.
Yeah, can I ask you cover the European Tour, obviously, or the DP World Tour. Is there the same level of entitlement over there? Are the players that, are they just as bad?
That's a good question. I don't think so. My sense is no. I mean, that you know, it's a tangent, but that tour has been so quiet in this whole situation. Players speaking, administrators speaking, obviously Keith Pelly's leaving anyway, but there's been such little noise. But probably to answer your question, no, I think the guys there are generally very grateful for their lot. And I mean, be honest, look at some of the European Tour events on TV. There's no one there. There's no one watching, and they're playing for decent money. They can do okay at probably quite a low ranking. So I think maybe that there's a reason for that entitlement not to exist there. So, and I think it probably doesn't.
Well, there's a reason for the entitlement not to exist in the PGA Tour as well. I just wonder.
Oh, of course. But I think the culture here has become different, and it's been overblown with stupid amounts of money that the game has lost the plot, particularly in the United States.
And Jay should be praised for that was included in his comments. He made clear that the whatever research they've done that they've gotten that message. So I thought that was a victory. I realize my bar is very low. Lawrence, we need to let Ewan go. I mean, did you say you have had lunch, or are we keeping you from lunch, Ewan? Because there is pretty good.
Jeff's heard enough of me, Lawrence. He's kicking me.
No, I just don't. I want to, I know they could be a little weird about the cutoff time. I want to make sure you don't miss the quality dining.
I'm good for another 10 minutes or so.
There's no problem. Good.
Right,
okay.
Right. Well, I just thought it was so interesting. Another reporter that Monahan clearly is, Mark Canizzaro. He asked a question. He got sent to the back of the room with some rant about we've got 144 of the greatest players in the world and the best tour in the world. This is when Jay, I think this is when Jay's mood went a bit off. He was asked about departures, gave an non-answer. I can only focus on what I want to control or what I can control. And then he went on to some rant about how amazing it is that the PGA Tour can create stars in 3 weeks. I'm not sure that's entirely true, but good on Matthew Pavon. I'm sure Jay Monahan had to learn his name. He'd never heard of him until he showed up this year. And then we had, this is brilliant, John Hopkins, dear old Hoppy, wandered across. He asked about Pelly and slumbers. I thought, Ewan, that the Monahan's reaction or response on Pelly was, I mean, grudging would be putting it at the higher end of the scale. Am I misreading that?
Yeah. I mean, I just get they give the impression they have so little care or regard for what's going on in Europe continually.
Okay.
I don't know if it's personal towards Keith. I suspect it isn't. But, the DP World Tour is brought up if someone else brings it up. It just constantly feels like an afterthought to me. Maybe that's unfair, but that's how it comes across.
Do you have any insight on the relationship between Pelly and Monahan?
It's fine, I think. I'm not aware of any problem there, genuinely. But again, how strongly... I mean, Jay, I think I'm right in saying, was in Dubai in November, and that was the first time he'd been in Dubai even to watch golf. And you think, right, well, how strong a relationship is this? I mean, in terms of the businesses and the tours, I think personally they're absolutely fine.
Yeah, Jeff, did you see anything on the Pelly slumbers response?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's, again, where he's just not polished and he's starting to get tired at that point. And, you know, he's probably a little annoyed. And I'm reading the answer. On paper, it looks great. And I think that's just where his lack of ability to smile and be the person he is one-on-one really does make that answer look kind of like, yeah, wait, am I, he just, and that's what's kind of a shame in all this is he's never gotten better at that stuff. And everybody who meets him one-on-one will tell you he's it's totally different than the person you see on the stage.
I guess we should really wrap this up. I mean, I could go on and on for hours on this. I love it all, trying to parse everything. The one quick question came from what's-his-face at Sky, Rory McIlroy's representative on Earth, about he asked Jay if anybody on the policy board had ever asked him to resign. I thought it was an interesting answer. It wasn't a straight no. Which made me think that the answer was yes.
You had to take that as yes. It's a very easy thing to say no to, isn't it? Very easy just to say no.
Yeah, I wonder who I wonder who asked him. That would be anyway, all good fun. We the other he said no to a world tour, I think. Oh no, he didn't. Speaking of, about co-sanctioning, yeah, he was asked about, you know, a global tour, and he, you know, essentially he just said that he spoke about the PGA Tour co-sanctioning in Scotland, and I think this was him saying, you know, there might be a world tour, but it won't be a world tour if we're allowed to kind of run it. That's what I read that to be. He was talking about co-sanctioning in that context, and that's really.
It tickled me because in his final elongated answer, it was a question about signature events, whatever. Limited fields.
That's
He
right.
started going about. He then started going about world rankings and average world ranking positions. I thought, geez, that's another conversation entirely. It was quite a note to finish on.
I don't know who it was, but it was asked about, you know, people who are not entirely happy with signature events, and are you happy with signature events? He said, well, I'm never satisfied. So again, the answer's the one thing, Ewan, clapping at the end of press conference, you weren't
Oh,
clapping. I guess you had the
no,
other
no, no.
gloves on.
In fairness, that was for Steve DiMeglio, I think. I think the
Yeah, yeah,
applause,
yeah,
because
yeah.
he
Okay.
said, Jay said it was great to see Steve here, and I took it the applause
Yeah.
was for Steve. I don't think it was
Yeah,
at all
okay.
for what had come before, in fairness. So I think it was legitimately applause for Steve DiMeglio.
Yeah, like before we let you go, Keith Pelly's leaving. It was a very interesting interview in the Times a couple of weeks ago, by young Mr. Kershaw. The what's Kinnings going to is Kinnings going to be anyway different apart from he doesn't wear blue glasses?
Yeah, I think he will be different. I mean, I think Keith Pelly will be a big loss to that organization. I think that I'm not saying Guy Kinnings is inadequate or anything like that, but I think, you know, Keith is a real force of nature, and he's, I think he's guided the tour very well through some turbulent, to put it mildly, times. I think he'll be a big loss. And listen, the DP World Tour, the European Tour Group, has to have its ducks in a line here. Where are they left if the PGA Tour and the PIF don't do a deal and don't come together? They need a backup plan. So I think they're very significant in all of this in terms of how are they looking at the next 5, 10 years? How valuable is their strategic partnership with the PGA Tour? Could they possibly do a deal with PIF, et cetera, et cetera? Their position, and very little has been said about it, but their position, I think, is highly fascinating in all of this.
Can I ask one quick follow-up, Lawrence, on that? Ewan, have you, if, you know, knowing that Guy Kinnings is, the Ryder Cup's sort of been his baby here, and have you considered the dimensions of the PGA Tour possibly investing more in the Ryder Cup with this Strategic Sports Group money, and what would be the European Tour's response if the PGA of America were to either sell it out? Sell it entirely or bring them in as a bigger partner.
Well, I think I'm right in saying there were leaked court documents which spoke about potentially a PGA Tour takeover of the European Tour Group, and that was central to that was the Ryder Cup, wasn't it? They wanted
Yeah.
a big
Well, that
slice
was,
of the Ryder
yes,
Cup.
on that side, right. Yeah. But
Yes,
not the
and that
American
was
side, right. Yeah.
what they wanted. I think that was the time the PGA Tour famously described the European Tour Group as a borderline distressed asset. That's what they said it was. But they wanted. I wrote the story at the time. Last summer, I think these documents emerged in court. But the Ryder Cup was what they quite openly, well, not openly because there were maybe private documents, but that's what they wanted. It was a huge entity for them. So yeah, you can't rule that out. That's a very valuable commodity.
Yeah, and Kinnings, in terms of just tell people what he's like. I mean, I know what he's like. He's not as flamboyant as Pelly, though, is he? I mean, he's more of a kind of apparatchik. Fair enough.
Yeah, well, cynically, he won't be as good for us in the media. He doesn't speak in headlines. He's a good guy. He's very straight. He knows the business and the industry inside out, which will be valuable. But, you know, he's coming in at a very different time, and he'll want to do things his own way. So it'll be interesting how he tackles it. But as I said, I think Keith will be a big loss to the organisation. I think he's done a very good job, and I think he'll be missed.
He was Monty's agent, Jeff, for about a decade, so he's used to
Yeah.
putting up with all sorts of nonsense. So
Oh.
good luck to Guy Kinnings. Ewan, you better go and get your lunch. Thank you very much for your time, mate. You do some great work at The Guardian. I was only teasing when I said earlier on that I was much better than you. It's pretty clear to anybody who reads your stuff that you're much better than me. So well done, pal, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Anytime. Good to chat to you.
Thanks, Ewan. Enjoy Ponte Vedra.
Well, thank you very much to a friend of the pod, Ewan Murray. He's off for his lunch at Ponte Vedra. Jeff, we will tackle the rest of the news for this week. I guess starting with, Bay Hill, won by Scottie Scheffler. He's back. I think he's stroke gained putting, Jeff. Well, obviously, people have been saying for a while, including Rory, that you know, if he starts putting, we're all in trouble. I wonder how Rory feels about giving him the advice to use a mallet putter, and he changed, switched to a mallet. Nice one, Rory. Can you imagine, though, Jeff, Tiger ever going on air and offering good advice to other players?
Do we know that he actually heard the advice? I wasn't clear on that. But yeah, no, it's just a good-natured way that Rory is. And yeah, I don't think Tiger would. Tiger would have the FUD, but yeah, no, he's a competitor. He doesn't want to share that. It's just, it's not a knock on either one of them, I don't think. But I think what's most disturbing probably for his peers, being Scottie Scheffler's peers, is that he, I mean, obviously the putting got better and the switch was wonderful, but you know, I mean Bay Hill's tough, the greens are tough to hit, but the he only hit 50 of 72 greens, which by his standards is not that great. And he won easily. You know, he just cruised on Sunday and nobody was doing anything, and he was, and he was getting up and down a lot, which he's not used to having to do because he hits so many greens. So that's really, I mean, and I noticed, I'm doing a little note in the newsletter, his Masters odds jumped to basically 6-1. He's obviously the clear favorite now. It's just, we didn't have a clear favorite, but you get him playing well like that and putting better. And, you know, Doug Ferguson had a stat, one last thing, Lawrence, in his notes this week. This just blew my mind because, you know, we get pretty excited when somebody plays 18 holes in a professional round of golf and doesn't make a bogey. I think, I mean, I don't care how good the equipment is, how good the conditioning is of the courses or the players. Since he turned pro, or since 2020, he has 44 bogey free rounds on the tour. So he had four bogeys on Saturday because he was really cranky. He was pissy and he was moany and he was barking at Ted Scott. And they cut away one time when he was really letting him have it over, you know, a missed 10 footer or whatever it was. And 44 bogey free round. That's a career of an all time great to have 44 bogey free rounds. And he's done that in just 4 years. That is, and with that footwork. It's just, yeah, amazing.
It's a couple of things. I think switching to a mallet's a pretty standard for guys who can't get the putts away online.
Yeah.
You know, if you've got a mallet, that, you know, is a bit more balanced through impact. So I'm not sure. I'm not sure Rory can take the credit for that. I was just messing around. The one person who can take the credit, Jeff, I'm going to mention, is Phil Kenyon, who is a whipping boy for all. I was about to say there is another prominent putting coach out there / putter, and famously great putter, who is never misses a chance to stick the knife into Phil Kenyon, and his acolytes are the same. So I will do the opposite. Good work from Phil. It's only 1 week, but that was a sensational putting performance. We'll see what happens over the next few weeks and months. But if Rory could be right, if Scheffler continues to putt like that, everybody else might as well go home. He is so so far ahead in terms of ball striking. His ball striking numbers are ridiculous. Speaking of Rory, his ball striking numbers right now are quite alarming. You would always think, I mean, he's such a brilliant driver of the golf ball, but I'm always high on Rory for the Masters, but my goodness, I am somewhat concerned right now. His as I say, I think he was -5 for approach play over the week. Pretty awful. Yeah, can I ask you, Jeff, because as I say always, I know very little about this kind of stuff. Bay Hill is a golf course. I did see a little bit of mood switch. I mean, people have been slagging it off for years, but I did see a few people who I would trust when it comes to golf saying, oh, you know what, this place is kind of growing on me. Is that ill-advised or is it well-placed?
I would probably put it in the context of everything that's going on right now in the game, that it's nice to see an old friend. You know the holes. They set it up tough. They've been really consistent in setting it up tough for years and trying to get the greens firm. And you saw Sunday, they got a little rain Saturday night and it took a little of the bite out of them. And they were still struggling with the place, I thought, all in all. But yeah, I think it's as much that as it's, I don't think it's an architectural observation as much as an old friend. An old reliable usually gives us good finishes, and the weather was nice. Yeah, everything cooperated, and all the stars came together. What's left of the stars. Unfortunately, Lawrence, that is not translating to ratings. The first round was down 30%. The second round, despite having Smiley Fridays to prop it up, was down 38% from last year. So I haven't seen the weekend numbers, but brutal, brutal numbers for the case that that Jay Monahan made today about their signature events and their stars. And I mean, he made both cases, by the way. He was on meritocracy and we could make a star in 3 weeks, which was true in a way. It's kind of weird to hear it said that way, but I get what Jason Gore's point was, is that's who he credited with that. But those are some rough numbers when we've been told relentlessly that bringing all these guys together, well, that's what the fans want. Well, the fans didn't watch, and not much competition really in sports last weekend either.
So yeah, right about the old friend. I mean, even I, I noticed that hole six is, something,
yeah.
You see something on that tee, you kind of stop and you watch it, and then you, the finish, 16, 17, 18. I didn't notice Rory driving the green on 10, the first guy ever to drive the green on 10. I mean, line he took on that is just absolutely incredible. The other thing, Jeff, this will give me a chance to plug the Quadrilateral. Your newsletter on Substack, an absolute essential for anyone who has an interest in golf, a serious interest in golf. Unserious interest in golf is also welcome, I guess, yes, as a subscriber. Jeff, anyway, you had a very long, funny and, punchy piece about, there was an incident on Saturday. You sent a video to me, actually. I don't know what I was doing, but I wasn't watching the golf. Of Wyndham Clark getting his old wedge in behind the ball, and the ball was in the rough. I think it was on hole 18. I think Clark was well in contention. He was on that rough on the it was on the right, wasn't it? I thought maybe not. Mm-hmm. It was on the right, and he got the old club in behind it. There was a bit of the usual Twitter spat. I've already stated my view on this kind of stuff, Jeff. I'm fed up at this stage. I mean, I like to see every player getting caught who might be breaking the rules, but my goodness, the legion of armchair rules officials now are getting completely out of hand. They are, I don't know who, they flagged somebody a couple of weeks ago, which was the Pavon one at Farmers, and the Farmers was preposterous, I thought. At your behest, I went and watched the Golf Channel's analysis. That was pretty damning. For those who haven't seen it, you can subscribe to the Quadrilateral. The video is there. I thought it was inconclusive. Brandel on the Golf Channel, essentially, I don't want to go too deeply into this, but he drew a circle around the ball and it seemed that the ball moved. But when I saw that, Jeff, I just wondered, well, has the camera moved? Maybe the ball stays put and the guy who's holding the camera moved the camera. I don't know. I don't know if the camera was on a tripod. Anyway, it looked pretty damning, but again, if you don't, no circle there, it didn't look like the ball moved to me, or there wasn't enough conclusive evidence. What did you think?
Well, it's touching to hear you come to Wyndham Clark's defense in this case, but his tee shot on the 18th at the U.S. Open was a wild shank pop-up fly to right field. I would agree with you that I'll give you an inconclusive on the video, but what was conclusive was just the ridiculous amount of mashing he did behind the ball, and as Mark Rolfing noted, the firmness of it, And that's why I wrote the piece where we're going to call it lying now and spell it L-I-E, because that's what it is. And it's Alex Michelli wrote a piece today basically saying the rules of golf need to be buttoned up. Because Lawrence, I went back and found your piece on Kenny Perry, read the and quoted the old rule on this, and then started reading the current rules and realized they've really defanged the rules on when it comes to this improving your lie, or it's all about protecting a player from an HD camera, basically. And there's nothing about discouraging people from what is, you know, a really kind of, to me, it's just shady. And Alex calls it a habit, and it is a habit, we now know. But why is it a habit? Because it was allowed to fester. And I've brought it up for years, as you know. It's been, we're talking 4 or 5 years now that I've been watching this increasingly happen. It stopped after the Kenny Perry incident that you wrote about in 2009, and now it's back. It's been back for a while. It's getting, it's short, it's tight lies, it's rough, and it's just absurd. And, you know, in Clark's case, it's shocking because he had an incident at the U.S. Open that he won, and won by one stroke, and it could have been the difference between winning and losing, and here he is doing it again. And I don't think he's intending to cheat, but he somebody has to explain to him that's just not, you're trying to improve your lie whether you think you are or not. I know you're trying to feel like what the club is. Well, guys in the past, and gals too, used to do that next to the ball, not behind the ball.
That's right.
They put the club down. And that's what's changed. And of course, if a few blades of grass happen to get pushed down in the process, what's the big deal? I mean, Scheffler does it. I've even seen Rory do it a few times now. And Tiger too, although not much. Tiger's pretty... He does not like to be seen in any way doing that kind of thing. He doesn't play much anymore either, including this week. So I guess the problem I have with it is that it just is just, and look, I don't want to sound like an old fuddy-duddy, but play it as it lies has been the essential rule of the game for almost 300 years. And there's a reason for it. And they have all the tools they need to play this game. They don't need to be doing this as well. And so I have no empathy if somebody moves a ball. And that's why I think you just need to zing somebody with a penalty at one point, and that's it. It's going to be over. It won't happen again. But they used all this rationale with the naked eye test and oscillate and all that. And the fact is nobody wants to discuss it. Brandel brought it up to his credit on the show. He just asked right out loud, when was the last time somebody was actually penalized for what was a violation? Why doesn't this happen anymore? Well, we know why it doesn't happen anymore. The rules officials are working for the players more than they've ever worked for them. And even though the rules have been reshaped to help the players, their paychecks are signed by these guys now. And one player that doesn't like a ruling is going to go to that board meeting, and you have a commissioner that's not going to back the rules official. And so that's where we're at. So it's going to keep happening. We're going to have more incidents. And I just don't understand why the players take it up to the edge. Somebody in their camp needs to explain, look, if you do this and you get called for a penalty, you're going to be in the Patrick Reed class. Do you want that? Is that what you want?
Yeah.
I mean, you have to, but nobody wants to tell anybody say anything to these guys.
I'm pimping the quadrilateral again, but please, you got, if you have it, go and have a look at it, or if you haven't subscribed, go and have a look, because I sent you a video back from the Kenny Perry incident back, and it was at the Waste Management Open in 2009, I think. There's a great, you pulled out two stills, and it's a playoff. It's Kenny Perry against Charlie Hoffman, and there's two stills. You pull Perry's off, balls in the rough to the side of the green, and there's Kenny standing there. There's no ball. And then he gets in behind the ball with his waist to just check the lie, and then there's a ball. I mean, it's just, and the Faherty commentary at the time, I never forget it. It was so funny. But here's a quick, I don't think I've ever told this story, but it's a quick follow-up. I think it was at the Players it was a while after, but I had the video on my laptop. And I tracked down Charlie Hoffman, and I tried to get Charlie to you know, say something about it. And he was like, you know what? He wasn't really, but I don't know if that was his surf dude mentality or was it our acceptance of, well, we all do it. One thing though, Jeff, I noticed from your note in the quad, It was a, I mean, the old rule was very, very, as you say, very, very explicit. A player must not improve or allow to be improved the possession or lie of his ball by any of the following actions: pressing a club on the ground, moving, bending, or breaking anything growing or fixed. I take it that that covers rough. Yeah. What's there now, Jeff? What's in that place where that used to be rule 13.2 in the old rule book?
Yeah, well, you have the eights and the nines in the new rule book, and it's just the language just isn't as tough as it used to be, and nothing like that where you have the word bend, and where you really know exactly when you hear that definition, that's a penalty. What Wyndham Clark just did is a penalty under that old definition. And, you know, now under 8 point, whatever it is, it's just, I had it here too on the computer. I was going to pull it up anyway. It's just not as tough. And that's something they shouldn't have to go back and police this and rewrite the rule. They should be able to just say to the players, it's a bad look. Cause I've talked about this many times, got Damon Hack drawn into the lawsuit for the same basic discussion, which is this, and I apologize to the people who are listening who heard me tell this before, but it used to be I would used to go to tour events, and of course Riviera here in LA is the best for getting a drive that's into the trees, and you get to get right up there and hear the player talk and see the approach, and I always played so well the week after because my rhythm was so good, and it was in part because you watched a tour pro. They didn't come stomping up to the ball and stomping behind to their ball and then mashing around. They came up gently. And as Damon said and on the air, which got him roped into Patrick Reed's lawsuit, you know, they used to approach the ball like a Fabergé egg. And they'd be so gentle. Like, you don't want to be seen screwing with your lie. You don't want to be seen possibly moving the ball. And of course, there used to be a time when Jack Nicklaus never grounded the club for tempo reasons, but he also played the game the right way. Oh, I hate that phrase. I shouldn't have used that. Anyway, he played the game properly, and now it's just very different. And I used to love watching that when they would do that, and you'd watch a pro, and it was such a gentle, careful, reasoned way they would come up to that ball with the funky lie on the whatever on the cart path or in the old dirt roads and under the eucalyptus trees, and now it's just kind of a carelessness that is it's being picked up at all levels of the game. You said you see it's pretty regular in college golf and kids. I've watched the U.S. Open qualifying last year and they had a lot of rough, and you're just like, oh my lord, they just come up and mash away. And there are some guys who still get it, but we've it's been allowed to go fester so long that the only way it gets reversed is with a penalty, I think.
Anyway, just to reemphasize that we're not particularly picking on Wyndham Clark. He just happens to be the guy involved in this. And as I say, I'd give him the benefit of the doubt on the ball, whatever. I think Alex Mazzelli is right, Jeff. It's just habit now. And the other thing is, it's more of a club now. Everybody, it's like the backstopping thing. Everybody looks after everybody else. It's complete and utter bullshit. I mean, also the lack of, there's a lack of characters out on tour, rough old guys. I mean, I'm thinking in the context of the European tour, policing. There was guys out in tour, the older, experienced guys, who kind of policed. They might not have been on site when somebody was caught doing something like this, but they would hear about it. And I'm thinking specifically of guys like Darren Clark and Thomas Bjorn. Those are the guys that ripped Montgomery over the Jakarta thing back in 2006. There's nobody, I sound like some stupid old man. Railing about the good old days, but the absence of informal policing is it's a shame that it's no longer there.
No, you're absolutely right. And when this topic has come up before, I'm trying to remember who specifically, but I know when I've gone to people, like an Andy North, a veteran players, and I go, how would you guys have dealt with that situation? They all said the same thing. I looked into it for a story. And they all said the same thing, Lawrence. You know, maybe in scoring, maybe while we're waiting, you know, for the other guy to hit a shot, I'd pull him aside and go, look, buddy, hey, yeah, you know, we're all out here. It's a tough job, but you just can't do that. You can't be pressing your driver down behind the ball. You can't be it's a bad look. It doesn't look right. And somebody might, certain people, Lanny or Hale, Irwin would probably tell him, don't you ever do that again.
Yeah.
But some people would be more gentle, you know, and more reasoned. But yeah, that's how it would have been policed before. And even the rules officials, they still have that ability. I know all of them and they're great at it because I know recently I brought up another terrible trend of the players, and that one they have been on top of. They've been aggressive with, and they've been fining, and they've been pulling guys in and saying, look, that can't happen anymore. And so they can do it, but for whatever reason on this one, they don't want to do it. And I don't understand, because it's so visible to the fan.
Anyway, we'll leave it at that. Bay Hill gone. Other events around the notable, Abraham Ansar won and lived somewhere, Hong Kong. Actually, Jeff, very quickly, great week for my Majestics. Bounce back.
I was going to say, you better not. Yeah. You got to mention that.
Yeah, it was a three-way playoff, but I don't know.
It was a rough 6,700 yard course. Not the most enthralling product that they put out. Good scoreboard on the first tee. That was kind of cool, the big video board, but it kind of went downhill from there. And Anthony Kim, 65. That's impressive.
Actually, we didn't bring it up with you in our earlier discussion, but Jay Monahan did confirm that they were. As you said the other week, the PGA Tour was in discussion with Anthony Kim. Greg Norman heard about it and jumped in. So Greg saying he'd been talking to Anthony Kim or concerned about his welfare for the last 2 years was a straightforward, straight up and down untruth. I mean,
goes along. Jay just said he's not a member of the PGA Tour. So whatever discussions Anthony had were about trying to restart his membership and any status he would have, but.
The main point is that, the point that Norman's suggesting that they've been talking to Kim for a couple of years.
Oh,
just plain nonsense. The good thing was Mateo Manassero come back.
Yeah,
I think I can't believe 30 years old. My God, Italian basically disappeared off the face of the earth for 10 years or so. Won a European Tour event in South Africa. Good on him. Fantastic player, Jeff. I well remember him winning. He was the won the silver medal at the famous Open 2009, the Tom Watson Open. I guess we should call it Stuart Sink Open. Anyway, really fantastic amateur player, great player, great putter. Actually, went off the deep end, tried to gain some distance.
I knew that was about to come up. Yeah, another in the long list of players who got. Sidetrack chasing distance.
Hey, do you know who I keep an eye on this? I'm hope I'm wrong because I think he's a pretty good player and a player I like to follow and support. Is Matt Fitzpatrick? He is chasing speed right now, and his golf game is rapidly heading south.
Just unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
He's such a good player.
Yeah, but he seems to be really. His swing looks like a caveman killing his lunch at this particular moment.
I also noticed he's. Where did I see him? He's added some muscle.
Oh my goodness! Yeah. But Manassero, it took him a long time to come back. So if you're listening to this, kids, I know we have a huge demographic in the 18 to 23 year old audience.
But the Fitzpatrick thing is just he had that Monty like swing and flexibility and ease where he just would have hit fairway and just had an incredible career, and he would have picked off some wins here and there, and maybe not long enough for certain places, and you just think why how many more times, we need to have like a Hall of Fame of people who chase distance and went from so talented to lost. It's amazing. He might get it back, but it's
say let's not write him off yet, but he
absolutely not. But
he missed a cut at Bay Hill. Manassero, brilliant to see him back, brilliant kid as well. You speak to guys who who played with him in the amateur scene and coming through when he broke through. He won the BMW at Wentworth, I think at the age of 19. Astonishing performance. Anyway, he's back. He, depending on, you know, how it goes, he's made a steady progression back. So you never know. He might be around with a sniff of a Ryder Cup pretty soon. That would be a real added bonus because he's a beautiful player to watch and just a delightful guy. And it's always, I love to see these guys from Italy and, you know, maybe Spain's a bit longer established, but Italy and France coming through and being good enough to play in Ryder Cups. I just think those countries they produce a certain type of player and that really appeals to me. And Manasseh is certainly one of those. I know we're under time pressure here, Jeff. So thankfully you haven't watched any of Full Swing, the Netflix documentary, which is been out for a week.
I'm going to watch it. There's just, I mean, like, there's so much on right now. I finally watched American Fiction. I finally watched Poor Things. I'm watching Masters of the Air, which is starts a little slow or a little weird and is just brilliant. There's just so much good stuff on TV. Why do I want to watch a bunch of guys sitting in their Jupiter mansions talking about their rough plight in life? But go on.
Well, because you're a golf journalist, Jeff, that might be the answer.
That would be a reason. Yeah.
But you are right. I mean, the mansions are just quite astonishing. They're all they're superannuated Mac mansions. They all look pretty much the same. They're all that massive glass window. All windows are glass, I guess. But you know, big windows and you know block architecture facing out onto the water in Jupiter. My goodness. Anyway, good luck to them all. I haven't watched all of it, but I did watch, I thought the issue one with McElroy was pretty good, actually. Rory admitting all kind of frailties, which I thought was quite interesting. He was prepared to do that on camera. But the one you got to watch, Jeff, is I think it's episode number 6, in which the US Ryder Cup team is picked.
Yeah,
it focuses on Zach Johnson, Keegan Bradley, and Justin Thomas. Now, I'm not sure that that Thomas and Bradley were competing for the same spot. I mean, so you throw Sam Burns in the mix. However, having watched this and the relationship, the very close, apparently seemingly very close personal relationship between Zach Johnson and Justin Thomas, I'd have to say that Sam Snead would have been left off the team in favor of Justin Thomas. maybe Justin Thomas and Zach Johnson have been stitched up by the producers, but my goodness, it is quite something to behold.
They've been housemates a few times at the Open, but you're bearing the lead. Remember, Justin Thomas and Jordan Spieth are on the 6-person committee that selects the captain. So that one's just a really big conflict of interest. And by the way, the U.S. has still not picked a captain for the next one, which they're way past their normal timing now. There's a certain person who did not enter this week, I guess, who is still pondering the role. But I plan to get into it because, you just see the reaction. And again, like we talked about with you and Murray, it's so fascinating how the gloves are kind of off with all things tour. And in the past, this would have been, they're bonded and it's a team and they got to do that. You got to have good, close ties with your captain and your players. And now I'm not on Twitter much anymore, but when I am, it's like, these old boys club crap. No wonder they lost, and Keegan Bradley should be livid and he should. And by the way, like Mr. America grinding, wants to win so badly, tough guy to face in match play. He could kind of, we talked about it. You get under your skin. Great. Would have been a great pick for that team. And he had no chance. Well, I should say I haven't watched the phone calls, but at the time it was pretty clear he should have been picked.
Well, you're talking about the sharing a house at the Open. There's Spieth, I think it's Spieth, Fowler, Thomas, and Zach Johnson are sharing a house at the Open at Hoylake. And I mean, basically discussing the whole thing in front, by all means, share a house, by all means, discuss it. But Jesus Christ, in front of the TV cameras, oof. I mean, don't rub it in people's faces like that. I thought it was nothing short of. I mean, if it was as portrayed on Netflix, I have no reason to doubt the otherwise. It was utter nothing short of disgraceful. Absolutely disgraceful. And I know Thomas did, he had a reasonable enough Ryder Cup, I think, in the context of a bad performance in the US. But anyway, I thought it was pretty revelatory, but perhaps not in the way that that Zach Johnson would have hoped. But again, I have issues with Zach Johnson going back years to the 2015 Open Championship and his gardening on the 15th green, or what I perceive to be. Anyway, we'll leave that to one side here. Anyway, Jeff, get to full swing so we can have a.
I will.
We should have a 2 hour. Like some other,
well, we don't need to do that. I think fried egg and no laying up already have mined it for every detail imaginable.
Right, I'm sure. Go on.
Oh no, we just one thing before. I don't want us to quit before we make sure to recap the visual that Jay shared in the press conference today that we didn't discuss with you, and the story about Brian Harman pulling in his truck. Jay, I want to have a word. So you just know I'm sure it's a very modest pickup truck. I'm sure it's not overcompensating for things in any way. And of course the story was Jay just wanted to, tell Jay these signature events are awesome. Oh. That was the whole story. Wow, Jay. Well, that's going to make the fans. If Brian getting out of his truck in the Sawgrass parking lot's happy, then the fans are going to be happy. Oh, my Lord. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. The actually, down in North Carolina last week, I was chatting to somebody who will remain nameless, but who would be apparently Mr. Harmon's politics are... Attila the Hun would be considered liberal, but I guess we already knew that he never misses a chance to tap into that popular hunting demographic and the crossover hunting PGA Tour demographic. Anyway, good luck to Brian Harman. Players Championship this week. Very quickly, Jeff, you got one line. Are you looking forward to it? take that as a no.
That would be a no. I mean, I don't. It doesn't. Here's the problem. As you know, I only cover the majors, and the Players in March so far has just not in the past, and now again has not been a great way to give us an insight into who's really playing well for Augusta. It takes the driver out of the hand a lot, and they harvest this ryegrass rough. I am anxious to see. They're slowly going to start, I'm told, doing some restoration, trying to get back a little of the Pete Dye edginess. Davis Love and Scott Sherman are the architects now. And Stephen Cox, who's the tournament director, I believe, or code tournament director. Anyway, this is his baby, and he's fantastic. And he told me to keep an eye out. It's going to be gradual, you know, eventually, because and it's not all their fault. Pete liked kind of the way it shifted, and I noticed today on Twitter my one search, everybody was swooning over the old videos of the way the place used to look, and so I hope they can get a little of that back, because I think the one thing this tournament, the identity of it is has been harmed by not having the golf course be something where they come once a year and it's just so different than everything else they play. And it had that for a great run there, and not necessarily, you know, it wasn't viewed as a positive by the players. Part of that was just new turf and stuff. But so I hope they kind of get that back, because that's the tournament's identity has just been muddied by the move back and forth May and March. And then are we going to have high rough? Are we going to have this lush striped fairways? Are we going to be swamp golf with, you know, pine needles right up to the edge of the fairway and sandy scrub and weird funky bounces? And I hope they get that back, because to me, that's, you know, get the flower beds out of there, and you're in a swamp in Florida. Make it, you know, and that's what Pete did initially, Mr. Dye. And I'd love to see that get back somehow, because that to me is what gives the tournament its identity, not the players, not the commissioner of the moment or the Taj Tim clubhouse. It's that old swamp golf thing that they just, but I don't think they like the look. And I don't think the Marriott and the resort guests, they think that that's what people don't want. I disagree. Now you just look at the reactions on the 50th anniversary videos to the old rustic look, and people are, they think it's pretty neat.
Anyway, we will leave.
So that was my one word answer.
There you go. We will discuss the players next week after Matt Fitzpatrick, Rory McIlroy playoff.
Yeah, don't worry too much about Rory, Lawrence. He's making sure he peaks at the right time. I just looked at some of his numbers. It's the inconsistency that is a little bit troubling. To go from that great 68 on Saturday to 76, that's got to bother him. But I don't think he's that far off either.
We will leave it at that. Jeff, I will talk to you next week. All the best, man.
Thanks, Lawrence. Take care.
It's a wide open road. It's a wide open road.